Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my co-host, Barbara, here. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Now, our guest today is Dr. James Gideon. He's an internist and a PhD in environmental health. And I brought him on because I got to talking to him about the coronavirus. And I figure it's something that everybody's thinking about, so I want to go ahead and bring it up. There seems to be a lot of what I would call feeling that the virus has us on the ropes, so to speak, sort of like it's beating everybody up, because, I mean, we've all been affected by it, you know. I was going to meet Barbara for the first time, and I couldn't because of the coronavirus. People are afraid about their family members getting sick. People are afraid of it. So, you know, it's like when everybody talks about the vaccine, you wonder, is it just talk or is there really going to be one? And also,
well, and not to mention 145,000 people that have died, or maybe there's more.
Yeah.
Okay, so hi, James. We're so excited that you're
here
today. There's so many questions. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Good. Where do you live?
Now,
I am retired and living on a rich farm in Northwest Ohio near the little town of Pandora.
Wow, I bet you're happy to be pretty secluded out there. It sounds like a lot of wide open spaces that you have to deal with. But, oh my goodness, I just heard on the radio today, driving in my car, a radio commercial for a pool party on a rooftop. They're selling tickets now, the California area where I live. What do you think about that? I mean, are we being careful? I'm thinking not. Careful enough.
It's
that
California.
Is.
That's pretty much to be expected.
Oh, cool. What about Miami, too? Places, any place where it's sunshine and people are, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
I know. You just, it's terrible to stay inside. You want to get out, and you can't see this virus, and you feel perfectly healthy, and people look perfectly healthy.
Right.
So,
wow.
It's very deceiving.
Yes, I mean, I had a mint, and it was so strong, I started coughing, and I was doing an errand, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sick, everybody. My mint was too strong. You know, it's like you think somebody's coughing. Oh, no, I mean, I could die being near them, and you can. So, what do you...
Well, we have the
coast,
we have this country covered then from California to Florida, going through the Midwest. I think we have a good cross-section.
Yes. Well,
now,
what is the time frame on getting the vaccine, do you think?
We're rushing things. We're just starting a phase 3 trial on 3 different vaccines, and I probably should to you if I were to back up and talk about the different approaches to treating this virus.
Okay.
Because it's one of the reasons I'm optimistic is in my field, rheumatology, over the past 20 years, the basic science has totally revolutionized autoimmune diseases, as we have understood the immune system and how it works, we've developed the capability of making medications that tweak the immune system one way or another, shut down autoimmune diseases. Now, that technology is the biotechnology involves being able to very quickly do the genome of a of anything we want. So we can actually characterize the complete genetic structure as we have done with the coronavirus. And we can also, if we decide that we want to make an antibody or a vaccine, we have the technology now to make exactly what we need to make. It's like hunting with a sniper's rifle versus a cannon. We are so sophisticated that once we figure out the underlying biochemistry and the underlying genetics of how these things work, then we can get under the hood, tweak it, and it's ours. And we are in the process of doing that. It turns out.
Oh, that's so great. Wait, hold on, James. I have a question because I get sent a lot of different things. One of them was
yes.
This lady saying, be careful of this vaccine because it will actually change your DNA. What was that all about?
Doesn't change our genetic structure. One of the approaches, and it's an amazingly sophisticated approach that we've never had occasion to use. When our body makes protein, our cells unravel our DNA for a template. Proteins are coded within DNA. What happens is our cells untwist that because it's a double helix, and then they have enzymes that take that DNA and use it to make a negative template. It's kind of like negative screen printing. So it's called messenger RNA. And then that messenger RNA is used as a template to make the proteins that our cells want to make. And it's used again and again and again. Our cells use that, and it gives the exact sequence of amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. So that's how our body works. So what these clever people, and there are about a half dozen groups working on this, is in one way or another, putting this messenger RNA in our cells, in the respiratory system, the cells take that in and they start making antibodies. We use the messenger RNA for antibodies to the virus, or we use it to make certain viral proteins that make our body make antibodies. So let me go through that again. We understand so well how our body works that we can go in under the hood, take our respiratory cells, put this template into them. They take the template and they make virus proteins. Those in turn, there's not viruses and they're not contagious. Those proteins in turn are the same ones that we develop antibodies to. So what we're doing is essentially making our body make our own vaccine.
Wow, I really do feel optimistic after hearing that explained. Thank you so much. Is there a place for people to really get the real facts instead of, you know, listening to anything that they just come across on Facebook and are sent? I mean, people send me stuff like this nonstop. That is one question I have. And then also, who are these people who allow themselves to be tested with this vaccine? I mean, who are they testing it on? That's so interesting to me.
Well, now that's a good question. Then, and that's one of the things that takes time. I don't know if you're old enough to remember thalidomide. It was used back in the 1960s or late 50s in Europe.
I was born in 68. That's when I was born.
It was used in Europe and it turned out that it caused major birth defects, and it was used for nausea in pregnant women. Our FDA is so cautious. We never approved it in this country because the studies hadn't been done. So that's an example of when you rush things, when you try to rush, you can miss important things.
Oh, yes, I felt like it's going to be a rush because usually it takes a few years to get a vaccine to something. Is that about the time it usually takes?
Yes, it could take about 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of the problems is there's really no money in vaccines. There's a lot of liability. There's this hype about Asperger's syndrome, which isn't there's no association there. But because of that, there have been lawsuits, and the companies, there are very few companies that have been willing to put out the private funding to make vaccines. Now, of course, this is a totally different story, and the government is as they should, funding this. But in developing these, there's phase one, which they do animal testing, and they see whether animals that are fairly similar to human beings tolerate it, then kill them, and that it seems to work and keep them from getting the disease when they're exposed.
Wow. I heard that they use a pig. Are pigs near to our – do they use pigs?
They use all kinds. They use rats and monkeys, and it depends on the particular metabolism and the particular what they're looking for. That's phase one. Phase two, they expand and they do very limited people only looking for safety at that point. They think that it's going to work. They think it may work. But at that point, they want to make sure that it's safe in people. And they have
and they
all
do
the peers. Yeah, they do usually range finding from low, medium, and high dose. And they measure, in this case, they would measure the antibodies that are formed as a result of it. And they would look for any clinical symptoms or adverse effects with perhaps 20 or 30 people. I'm not sure the exact number, but a small
number
of people.
That's phase two.
That's phase two.
And what are we at? Phase three.
Then phase three is where you actually test it in the population, and that's the only way to test this. At this point, you're fairly sure, both in terms of your experimentation and also in terms of the science behind it, that it's probably going to be safe unless there's totally unanticipated. Phase three is a randomized, double-blind, prospective, placebo-controlled study. That's the gold standard for medical studies. That is, you treat people. In this case, they're treating 30,000 people in areas where there's a fairly high level of exposure or risk of exposure. 15,000 get the vaccine, 15,000 get a placebo. The standard that they have set is it has to be at least 50% efficient, and hopefully 50% effective, and hopefully a lot more than that. So there are three different vaccines, including the messenger RNA concept, that are have been approved based on the work to date to enter phase three trials.
Oh, are they going to share all of the different countries? Are they going to share worldwide their findings and studies so then we could find this more quickly, or is each country working on it in their different way?
Europe, England, Germany, France, Israel, India, China, and a number of other, and of course the U.S., a number of other countries are working on their own versions. Hopefully, because this is a human world problem, hopefully we will be able to share findings and share technology and then have the manufacturing done in numerous places so we can get, once we decide what we want, so we can get this manufactured pretty quickly and get it out there pretty quickly. Hopefully
it
will
be
licensed.
Like, if it normally takes 3 years or even 10 for a vaccine, and they're rushing this, what do you think we should expect realistically of when they have it for all of us?
I think in 1 year from now, we will be giving people vaccines.
Oh, wow. Maybe on my birthday next year. Seems weird.
Well,
actually,
he,
a long time.
He said that.
Wow.
He said that I should be able to go see you on my birthday in May, is what he said.
Oh,
I asked
wow.
him he said that
oh,
I'll be able to travel. And he also said that, I think if I'm not mistaken, people like your mom who are at high risk will be probably be able to get the vaccine, and I think in the spring. Isn't that right?
I think in a year we will have enough and be confident enough that we will start giving this to high risk people. That is healthcare providers, military, policemen, and people in nursing homes and group settings, people in prisons, people in nursing homes, where they're just a setup for this to spread.
Yeah,
I think we'll have enough. And then I think my guess is from about year after the end of year one, into year two, we will be manufacturing it and beginning to disseminate doses of it. My bet is let's say we're August 2020, starting summer of 2021, we'll be cranking out fairly large quantities, and we'll be giving that out and applying it just as quickly as we can make it.
Wow, that's great. Okay, I feel a lot better. I bet listeners out there are feeling a lot better. So what about, can you tell us anything about when people recover from having the coronavirus? What are the effects after for a lifetime? I've been hearing that they are having some bad side effects. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
This is a systemic virus. It can affect any kind of apparently lining of surfaces, including the lining of blood vessels, and it can cause something called a vasculitis. Itis, vascular means blood circulation. Itis means inflammation. So that can be a very serious problem. This is so new, we're just finding out. Kicker is it may actually trigger a number of autoimmune diseases. I wouldn't be surprised with lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, the things in my field, any number of autoimmune. We think that many of these autoimmune conditions are triggered by some sort of infectious agent. We just don't know what it is because it happens well in advance of the symptoms. But, for example, we think Epstein-Barr virus may be a contributor to setting off lupus. So about 20% of people, seem to have some degree of long-term compromise of their respiratory function from lung damage. There's probably between the virus and the associated immune response. some damage, permanent damage to tissue.
Well, you just don't want to get it at all, then. I mean, you, some people think,
really,
well, if
don't.
I get it, I'll probably make it through. But no, you don't want to get this at all.
You really
it could
don't.
Haunt you for a long time.
Yeah, especially with asthma. When the people that die, die from respiratory failure. And usually the common denominator, the risk factors include age, obesity, diabetes, COPD or emphysema or other respiratory problems. And that's because these people don't have the respiratory reserves. Let's say that this virus decreases with a respiratory infection for someone who is quite ill, decreases our breathing capacity by 75%. If we only have a 25% margin of reserve capacity, a 75% reduction, you're gone, because people die of and that's why the whole thing about people on ventilators has been such an issue. That's who's at real risk. It's those with severely compromised respiratory function.
When you're on the respirator, are you having to be out completely? Like, do they have to induce a coma when you go on to that thing?
They usually do, for people who are that sick.
But not always?
You try. Well, I think almost always. If you're on a respirator on oxygen and the respirator is breathing for you with 75 or 80% oxygen, there's something called ARDS or acute respiratory distress syndrome. That this is kind of like, but it doesn't behave the same way. And we tried managing it the way we do ARDS, and it didn't work very well. So we're still figuring out how to manage these people who are on respirators.
Oh, wow.
I think part of the problem is, as I said, they simply run out of respiratory reserves, and you can't get enough oxygen through their lungs to support life. And they wind up slowly getting more and more hypoxic and building up carbon dioxide, particularly the low oxygen. They simply go into cardiac arrest because there's not enough oxygen.
It's really sad. I feel like sometimes we're kind of behind. Like, why weren't we really studying this harder before it all happened? How do you feel about it?
This just took everyone by surprise. We had no idea that something like this was going to come along. And the kicker is, the thing that's made it really difficult is there's about a 10-day asymptomatic period where people are contagious and they're shedding virus and they don't know it and we don't know it. So how do you manage when you've got all these people walking around who may have the virus and they're spreading it all over the place and they have no symptoms? And they spread it to other people who have no symptoms, and then all of a sudden everyone gets sick.
Okay, when they don't have symptoms, are you saying if they went into a clinic and got tested, there would be no trace that they actually have it, but it hasn't shown up yet? Is that what you're saying?
The tests, the different states testing, when they've tested the population, anywhere between 10 and 25% of healthy people are showing up as having had the virus, and they never knew it.
Wow.
So this virus
is
way more, way more spread out than we ever imagined. And so the traditional way that we've fought these diseases, like with the original SARS or with the flu or with other more contagious things, is we identify the person that has it, we quarantine them, and then we go look at everyone that they've exposed, and if they are positive, we quarantine them. The problem is we don't know who to test.
Yeah. Well, I go to little restaurants just to take out, you know, and they have me write my – if I actually have to enter and with the gloves and mask and order the food and then wait outside until it's ready. But they also want you now to write your name down in case somebody at their place comes down with coronavirus. They can contact each one of those people who have been ordering food for – I don't know, their list must be miles long. You know what I mean? It's just – very hard to control, and I totally understand what you're saying, and I want everybody to understand. And yeah, and I mean, we appreciate what you're doing. Are you actively testing this, studying this every single day, trying to find a cure yourself, or not a cure, a vaccine yourself, James?
Am I? No, I am not actively involved in research. I understand that very well, and I actually volunteered to go to New York.
I have a question.
Yes.
You know, I think we talked about this many years ago, and I don't know if I told Barb about this. This is another thing to fuel the optimism. Many years ago, apparently we were doing battle with another coronavirus, and apparently, as I understand it, we came very close to finding a vaccine. But what happened was they stopped it because they didn't think it was worth the funding. In other words, the vaccine wasn't as big a deal. Is that true?
Yeah, that was done in Pittsburgh. And they have a lot of expertise in coronavirus technology. But now, that's a case where the original SARS virus didn't have the latency period, and we caught it early. We were very proactive. Canada did an outstanding job. That also came from China. It went to Canada. They very aggressively identified people who were sick, And they were able to because they got sick pretty quickly. And then they identified all the contacts and quarantined everyone who had it, and the virus went away because they caught it early.
Oh.
SARS, the original SARS, doesn't exist anymore. I'm not aware of any cases that have.
Oh, that's good. So it's totally been annihilated, the whole virus, and it's never going to come back? It does not exist?
It's another virus. It probably jumped from animals to humans, but before it could spread to very many humans, we were able to contain it so that it didn't continue to spread.
Oh, that's good. Oh, wow. James,
yep.
Earlier in the show, I think I caught it was off on another subject, but it was so interesting because we had a lady who was talking to us yesterday about autism, and she was an expert on that, raising an autistic child and involved.
Wow.
And then I asked her, but I never got the answer. We got distracted or something. So vaccines do not cause autism, Asperger's, that kind of thing. Is that what you said?
When they studied, they've done elegant studies of people. I think there was one with the measles vaccine. It might have been Korea. I can't remember. I think they did an entire population study of people who had gotten the vaccine compared to a control population, and there was absolutely no difference in autism or Asperger's between the two populations. That's
okay.
You can't just find examples. You have to be scientific, and if your child is autistic, that's very sad, but it doesn't mean that it was because of the vaccine. However,
okay, thank goodness. Okay, however, sorry to interrupt.
Our immune systems are all different, and with some autoimmune diseases, it's possible that something that triggers an immune response, as a vaccine does, could set off a malfunction of our immune system that was already there. It doesn't cause it, but it may tip the balance for something that was inherently there to begin with. We just don't know. We don't have a good. We haven't done enough testing of the human genome to begin to figure out these things.
Hopefully you can eventually test the baby before it even starts its vaccination for the whole its life throughout childhood life. And hopefully you can find that out, because that is the risk. I mean, that's a big risk, right? That's a big risk.
Thank you for clarifying that, James. If we could identify who was at risk, then that would certainly be a big plus.
Yes, it will, and I believe it will happen. Okay, so, Johnny, you say that we have a caller?
Well, we do, but the person got disconnected. I was asking this person to call in because this is somebody that's been on our show, called into our show before, who has had corona. And let me see here if I can
I'm
get
sure
that person to call in.
Let's talk about New York. Are you waiting to see if they will fly you out there for another hands-on person that we desperately need? I hope they do. Are you waiting to hear?
They have an age limit, and I'm over their age limit.
Oh,
so,
you're kidding. That's a horrible rule. Come on.
Well, they felt I would be at too high a risk. That's fine. I can sit back here and Sunday morning quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, you're so helpful, though. I mean, you're helping so much today by answering these questions. And I'd like to know, though, when you listen to the news, I've heard that there's a lot of complaints about, fake news. Can't they get it right? What's going on? It's not a competition. You know, some people think it's a competition. We're doing better than this country or that country. To me, no, it's like, stop that. I don't want to hear all that. But when you listen to the news, do you cringe at, like, oh my gosh, it's so wrong? Or is the news right? Is it wrong? What should we take from the news and not take?
It's sad. There's so much politically going on that it confuses the science. I'm a scientist and a doctor. If it were left up to me, we'd all work together and cooperate and be sharing all the good things that we discover. And
me too. I agree. I totally agree with that for sure.
Mm.
Well, hopefully this. I hate to point out and bring up that there will be side effects most likely after somebody recovers from the coronavirus. That's not good news to hear, but we want to know the truth.
And that's still playing out. This is so new. Now, the other, there are several ways to approach this. And one of the exciting things that I hope will develop is the concept of using monoclonal antibodies. We're very good at making these. We have a lot of medicines based on monoclonal antibodies. And monoclonal means they're all exactly the same. They all react to the same thing. My hope is we would be able to develop monoclonal antibodies to the binding site on the spike protein of the coronavirus. That's how it attaches to our cells. If we, for example, if someone were ill and we were to give them an IV infusion of monoclonal antibodies, those antibodies could theoretically bind to the virus, tie up the virus so it couldn't infect our cells and stop it in its tracks. And I believe there's work going on along those lines. That would be a wonderful treatment. It wouldn't be a vaccine, but it would be a treatment.
A treatment. Like AIDS, does that even have a vaccine or a lot of treatment?
Totally unique virus that hides inside our immune cells. And we finally figured out how we can control it, but we can't get rid of it because it's inside our cells.
Oh, that's interesting. But thank goodness there's ways to have AIDS, HIV, and now I'm hearing, oh, it's a mild case of HIV, not AIDS. So it totally has changed. And people date, people have relationships, and they hopefully are just honest with their partner. Yes, and they're living normal lives. And, wow, that wipes out a lot of people.
And should have a normal, pretty much normal life and normal life expectancy. And that's
great. Yes, and not all those side effects after. Well, maybe there's some side effects from the medication, but that is wonderful news. That what a great breakthrough.
But they're also probably not contagious because the viral load is so low from controlling the virus. So that also reduces the spread of HIV.
It would be nice if they made some kind of announcements to the public, because I never knew that. I never knew that now it's not even that contagious. So that is a breakthrough that a lot of people probably don't even know about.
If it's controlled, it's
right.
Some people, of course, don't know they have it, but it is, as always, there's proper precautions that need to be taken with all these things.
They need to be very responsible. If somebody has something that is slightly contagious at all, please be careful. And you know what? I used to get like little scratchy throats more often wearing a mask and gloves and being ultra careful, washing my hands all the time and doing everything that they say to do. Literally never, not even one little scratchy throat this whole time. Since March, I was one of the first people to get a mask because I was going to be traveling, and then it was all canceled all of a sudden. But I was feeling embarrassed to wear a mask at first, like everybody, but I still did it. But not a lot of people did, but literally not one scratchy throat. And so it goes to show you
were,
being careful.
You were wise.
Doing the basics.
You were wise to be proactive. Yes.
Thank you. And that's just basic stuff that we should always be doing. And you know what? Going into a place for errands where they have the glass shields up at the convenience store or grocery stores, all those glass plastic shields protecting those people, I think it should have always been like that.
Yes, it should have. We would be.
Yeah, who wants to get the cold? Who wants to get the cold, right? Who wants to even get any of that? And you know what? People, like children in Mexico, I hear they actually still die from the flu, that they're not just freely giving out the vaccines. Many families go without the vaccine at all, and they have children that are dying of the basic flu. Is that correct?
If they're not getting the vaccine, it can be lethal in children. And I expect there's so much poverty in parts of Mexico that I wouldn't be surprised at that.
Yes. Yes. Okay, but it's not a race, and I totally agree with you about not wanting it to be political and not wanting it to be a competition of who can get there first and then hiding information or numbers. No. Just do the right thing. That's what I ask for the government to do. Just always do the right thing. But so many people are pulling and tugging and pushing each other I mean, we can all see that. It's just easy to see. It's just ridiculous.
If we don't learn to live together as a species, we won't survive.
What if we don't ever learn to live together and it stays exactly like this right now, James? How long do we have before we're just, like, done?
We are, well, that's a whole other issue, but we're rapidly going through resources and heating up the atmosphere, and we're making big changes in the Earth's environment. We don't know what that's going to do.
We sure are. The glaciers. I was up in Alaska, and they were falling off, and then they showed us pictures of 10 years before, and it was completely different. So I've seen it firsthand. I agree. And they try to, like, some people push that under the rug. We have to all do our part, people. We really do. And all this partying, hey, I'm getting bored myself in my place. Day after day, not getting together with friends and people and family and not going to go visit my dad who's elderly. Yes, I feel bored. But there's no way we're going to get through this if we keep going out and say, well, I don't care today. Today I just don't care. I'm going to go to this pool party on the roof and splash around with a bunch of strangers and, you know, share our cups and all that and go to the bathroom and, you know, there's no soap, whatever, just for today. No, think about everybody else. Think about the world. Don't you want your kids to go back to school like normal without masks? It brings tears to my eyes. We need to all just do our part. That's what I'm going to say. And I would like to ask Johnny if he has any questions for James.
Well, I think that what I was wondering about is, I was going to ask you about this earlier. You said that, are you as optimistic about them finding treatments in addition to the vaccines? Because I know, like, you know, we talked about, you know, them finding a vaccine. But, I mean, like, what treatments do you think they're going to be to where, you know, maybe the fatality rate may not be so bad. You understand?
I love those treatments. He said he wants to put every kind of protein in the cell for a person who's sick in the hospital bed, and that's like going to be an infusion through the IV, and it's going to be a treatment that is really going to help. So that's one that I've heard of. James, are there more treatments?
You have to understand the mechanism in order to manage it. Apparently, about the first couple of weeks, there's a viral infection that's affecting our lungs and doing damage. After that, our immune system responds to that, and a lot of the damage that happens from then on is from our immune system reacting to the virus and to the partially damaged tissue. So what we're going to learn, and we are learning pretty quickly, is at what point do you slow down the immune response and in what patients do you slow it down? It seems counterintuitive when you have an infection to suppress your immune system, but that's maybe exactly what we need to do to protect people from further damage. There are two ways we can attack this virus. The virus itself. One is to develop blocking chemicals that block the virus enzymes that the virus needs to reproduce. And you might recall there are a couple of medications that do that with the flu, like Tamiflu. What that does is it inhibits the neuraminidase that the flu virus needs to reproduce. And if you catch it early, it considerably helps. We don't have yet comparable medicines, but we likely will for the coronavirus. The second approach is to actually block the binding sites as I said, with monoclonal antibodies, which if we were able to do that, we could potentially shut the virus down so that it wouldn't enter our cells. The way this virus works, cells takes over the metabolism of our cells and turns our cells into virus factories. It actually does the same thing that we're talking about. They're similar with the messenger RNA. It takes its own proteins and substitutes those for ones in the cell and makes the cell like a captive to make virus proteins. Once the cell is completely used up from making all these proteins, it bursts open and all the hundreds of new viruses come out, and those infect other cells. So we need to block that process, and it's either blocking it by inhibiting the viral enzymes or blocking the virus binding site so it can't enter into our cells. And we will have those. There's active work going on with that. But it's harder. It's a lot harder to develop the some of these, particularly the attacking the viral enzymes, because they're so specific to that virus, and trying to figure out what will affect them it takes time. That's basic research on coronaviruses. It may surprise. There may be someone out there who's got this figured out and just waiting to test it. I'm truly impressed with the biotechnology competence that human beings have at this point.
It really is a lot. There's a lot to it. There is, a reason why you went and studied all of that and you know all of this. So, I mean, you're shedding a lot of light on the subject for sure. But when Johnny tries to get that caller back, I wanted to know more about you personally. So have you taught this in college? What is a little bit, tell us more about your background.
I originally studied chemical engineering and went to work for part of CDC and obtained a PhD in environmental health and managed a group of about 20 engineers finding ways to prevent occupational disease. We went and studied common problems like brake dust and lead smelters and pesticides and things, and found the best ideas that we could find, and then described those and documented them so everyone else could use them. We felt that was a pretty efficient thing to do. I did that as long as I wanted to, and then went to medical school. From there, having put together a very nice program of engineering, and then went to Ohio State for medical school and then subspecialized in rheumatology and went into private practice and treated about 70,000 patient visits and has a wonderful time helping people get better with autoimmune diseases and overuse things. Having a background as an engineer and a scientist gave me a little different perspective, and I have been able to solve a lot of problems that other people were scratching their heads about. And the whole idea is to get people better, to have someone walk in all kinds of pain from fibromyalgia, for example, and then come back a week later and be in no pain. It is really a highlight of my life.
Oh, yes. I can definitely imagine that. and it probably happens pretty quickly with your treatment. Is this due to a lot of joint issues? And is the rheumatology, I remember we were talking about having you on, and somebody who was on the line did not know what it was. Can you just describe exactly what is it?
Well, it's actually changed. It used to be rheumatism is just arthritis and aches and pains, but rheumatologists deal with a lot of aches and pain, and I dealt with a lot of central pain things like fibromyalgia, and also a lot of autoimmune diseases, such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, and that involved a lot of these new sophisticated biological medications that target specific proteins called cytokines that our immune system uses to communicate. And by tweaking those, we can shut down the autoimmune diseases and make people better. It's been quite remarkable over the last, when I first started, Enbrel was just being brought out. And since then, there are probably at least 30 different biological medications that for treating a whole variety of things.
Oh, cool. I'm wondering if this is the same thing as, or if you have a clinic that does this, where people walk in and they sit down in a lounge chair, they get infused with a vitamin drip and then other things in it that help their immune disease. I used to date somebody who did that. I never got into it, but they were loving going there and doing this. And then I know a dancer who does this. Is this the kind of thing you're talking about, or is that not what you do at all?
I'm a scientist, and it's surprising how many people, the symptoms that people were sent to me for were very nonspecific. Fatigue, pain, just didn't feel good. And that can be, it involves quite a bit of detective work, actually. It can be anything from obstructive sleep apnea to a vitamin D deficiency, a vitamin B12 deficiency, an autoimmune condition, depression, fibromyalgia. There's really no substitute for seeing a lot of patients and just getting a feel for what the bell-shaped curve is for each one of these conditions. And if it doesn't fit, then it either isn't that condition or there's more than one thing going on. It becomes rheumatologists tend to be problem solvers because the symptoms that our patients are sent for, no one else has figured out, and they're often very confusing. That's why we subspecialize in medicine, because there's so much
now
to learn.
It is, what I asked you this one question, and I think it was. I know that you said that HIV is an entirely different specific disease, but the only reason I'm bringing it up is to give people a perspective of like how hard one is to get rid of and how easy one may be to get rid of. If this was HIV that we were doing, would we be having all the successes that we've been having for the treatments and the vaccine, possible vaccines? So this was HIV that we were devoting, this was HIV?
If HIV were as infectious by a respiratory route as this coronavirus, we'd be hurting. We would really... And we were starting from scratch. I don't even want to think about the implications and the the health burden.
Right.
Because HIV, uncontrolled HIV, since it takes out the immune system, what it does is it breaks down the command and control part of the immune system. And so we get all kinds of opportunistic infections with bacteria,
in other words, yeah,
parasites. Yeah.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is that we would not be having the successes that we've been having. I mean, we would not be having, like, possible vaccines. We wouldn't be having – so, in other words, this is to show you that it's not us – it doesn't necessarily have us on the ropes. There's actually been able to land a few punches. It's just that it seemed like it's on the ropes because everybody's sort of, you know, oh, well, you know, I have to work from home and, you know, we have to give everybody $1,200 and, you know – it just seems like it. I do think that, based on what you're telling me, though, in the fall is when all of the trial runs are going to go through, and I think that's when we're going to finally see what this vaccine is, right, and treatments.
Probably, I think we will have a better idea in the fall of the progress toward developing vaccines. But I think it's going to be well into 2021 before the vaccines are actually approved and we start. Of course, what they're doing is, which I think is a great idea, they're betting that these vaccines are going to work. And so they are, without the vaccine yet approved or even knowing for sure it works, we're ordering 100 million doses. So that's being done in parallel rather than in sequence in order to cut time off. So, like I say, I think that a year from now we will be starting to publicly give the vaccine. Before that, I think we will have enough confidence to give it to people at high risk and high need.
I will tell you, I feel like what's going to happen, I feel like when this thing is vaccinated, that we're going to probably have a nation of people who feel like they've been let out of prison. I mean,
we probably will.
That's what it's going to feel like. You know, because, I mean,
like,
all this,
it's going to be like an ice jam breaking in the spring, I think. It's going to get worse before it gets better, because when people try to go back to school with sporting events, with group activities, that's going to spread the virus around. And it's going to look worse in the short term, next 6 months. And then as we start to get better and better news about the vaccines and start making them, when the ice jam breaks in the spring, it's pretty fast.
Wow, what do you think about Tim Walton as to send our kids back to school? Like, we're supposed to make the decision. There's two scenarios. I'm supposed to mark what I want. Kind of half-time, connection with the teacher at the school with extreme caution, or strictly online. What would you do if you had a 13-year-old kid?
I'd probably it depends on how much time I was willing to spend with them. I'd probably opt for the former, with some contact with the teacher, just because you can get so off track if you're totally on your own. And 13-year-olds
don't
have discipline.
We did, James. We got so off track my daughter moved to a new school. She was already having a tough year. Then the coronavirus, and then a new school, and then us trying to do it when she was already behind. And it was just like, oh, my gosh. Now grandma is dying, and, you know, it just was too much. We're so off track. So they sent me that form, and I feel better that you said that, because I want to opt for that as well, for my daughter's sake at learning. I mean, this is a crucial time. This is like setting up for college. If they start failing everything now, I mean, that's not going to be a good habit to be in, to accept even. I'm really worried.
You can't make that up. If you don't learn it, then it's not there. So, yeah, right. I would opt for that. I might even consider getting them some tutoring.
Okay.
And I think the school should offer tutoring and working with them to overlearn and study. Education is everything.
For free, because I looked up tutors, and it's like for four sessions, it was like $2,000. I mean, for heaven's sake.
Okay.
No, but, yeah, it was a lot. And that was online tutoring too, James. That was for online. Online,
forget
like
it.
Virtual. Yeah.
Well,
forget it.
Then you're gonna have to do some work then.
Me personally, right. Well, I just relearned algebra, by the way, so I feel good, you know.
Good.
My brain's working in different ways now than it ever has.
Our brains are amazingly plastic.
Cute.
That is to say, plastic meaning that they can reprogram themselves. And
yes. I believe it.
So
I believe it because we are not even using we're not using much of our brain. So challenge yourself, people. You can do it. Teach your children, and you
got to
do what you got
to
do.
Bring you closer together. And if you're off work, dig in and study and help your kid learn and learn it yourself.
Yeah. I enjoy learning it, actually. And I get upset when she's like, no, Mom, I don't want help today. I want to do it myself. I got it under control. And I'm like, oh, darn. I wasn't really enjoying that, actually. Thanks for the encouragement.
Yes. Yeah. Go for it. You'll never regret it.
That's so sweet. Thanks. Well, Johnny, what a wonderful hour this was.
Yes.
I feel so much better about everything. I really do. I feel like I've been enlightened by James, and I hope the listeners were as well. And James, I would like to ask you, now that we're closing the show, where can people reach you if you want to be reached? I'm not even sure. Do you want to be reached? Do you do anything on social media that you want? You're in a group or anything you want to tell the listeners about?
I published quite a few things on Quora, Q-U-O-R-A, and they can actually look me up and pose a question through Quora, Q-U-O-R-A. It's a companion, more substantive website to Facebook that has a question and answer format. There's a lot of good information on there. That would probably be the best place to pose a question. Not only would you have the benefit of my looking at it, but also there are a lot of other people with a lot of experience who also answer questions.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, that would be. You could look me up on Quora, and I've answered quite a number of things about the virus and life in general.
Oh, I love it. And so that's James Gideon, everybody, on Quora. And I've had some questions answered on there. And I know Johnny enjoys Quora, too. So check it out. And you can find this show and all of our other shows on our Life, Laughter, Happiness YouTube. So check us out there. Please subscribe to us and support our channel. Johnny and I also have a TV channel on Roku called Life, Laughter, Happiness Learned. And we would love it if you could watch. Yeah, thank you. We'd love it if you could watch those episodes and write a review. And we're excited about it, James. It's really fun. It's when people can actually see us. The podcast, they cannot see us on radio. So we're doing something where they can actually view us, and they can be viewed too if they choose. So. And that's cool. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Life, Laughter, Happiness. We care about all of you listeners and callers. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. And thank you so much, James Gideon, for being our fabulous guest tonight. And thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for asking me.
No,
it's truly a pleasure.
I hope we have you back sometime, James.